This week on Art of the Air features Deborah Silver and Paul Bowman of Duo Sequenza discussing their project Listen Up, which due to COVID is going virtual this year with the help of Lakeshore PBS and Art on the Air. Our episode will feature South Shore Suite based on musical interpretations of Northwest Indiana. Our spotlight is with Susie Vance and Nancy Schwab of the Depot Museum and Gallery Memorial Day opening and their 5x5 exhibit.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Depot Museum and Gallery located in Beverly Shores. First, Nancy Schaub, the gift shop manager, and of course, Susie Vance, who's president of the organization. Ladies, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Welcome.
Well, Nancy, we'll first go to you and talk about something exciting that's coming up is the famous 5x5 Depot exhibit. So tell us a little bit about what to expect and what it's all about.
Sure. The 5x5 is an annual event that the Depot holds. It's our major, major fundraising event. And artists contribute a 5-inch by 5-inch piece of art that traditionally has been put up on the gallery wall. And at 5 o'clock on the evening of the event, people come in and snag the piece of art that they want before somebody else gets it. And it's very, very exciting. It's a great way for the community to get together. But this year and last year, due to COVID, it's online. So on May 14th at 5 o'clock, we invite people to go to bsdepot.com, in this case, and go on, and the event will open, and they can put the piece of art they want in their cart and purchase it. So it's very, very exciting. We have over 55 artists who are contributing. We have regional artists such as, well, Susie Vance, who's a fiber artist, contributing, and Karen Brown, who does beautiful glass work, as well as Sue Coombs, who does fantastic mosaics made from sandstone and mother of pearl and other materials, as well as just a host of incredible, incredible artists. It's really exciting, and it's very exciting to see the amount of talent there is in the community.
So, Nancy, when is the deadline for submission, and where do they drop off their submissions?
Well, what we're doing now is the deadline is May 9th for submissions, and we are asking for submissions to be made online. So they submit their photograph of their artwork. If they go on bsdepot.com and click on 5x5, it'll show you all the details. Once it's sold, it gets dropped off at the Leo Firm Gallery, which is in Beverly Shores, right on 12 near Broadway.
Oh, that's so efficient. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What else is going on in the gift shop when you're looking in? I know you're coming up with an opening, which Nancy can talk about. So tell us a little about the reopening and the physical gift shop.
Sure. Well, right now, because we've been online, we have a host of artists. We have such a broad base of artists and product that we otherwise wouldn't be able to have in the depot. But once the gift shop opens, people get to actually see and touch and feel jewelry and ceramics, as well as see artwork. And we'll be moving product in and out all the time. We have bird products coming in, like bird mugs that change color, as well as metal sculptures of birds that can be pounded into trees. And then, of course, our artwork, jewelry and glasswork.
So, Susie, we're so excited that the depot will be opening for art exhibits. Can you run through who we'll be seeing every month?
We are very excited. The first up is Christina Nowski, who is an amazing painter, who is doing all new pieces for her show, which is Birds of the Great Marsh. I've seen a couple of them already. They are absolutely fantastic. Following that in July is Dorothy Graydon, who we all know goes and visits petroglyphs and other ancient artwork, and then comes back and is inspired to do renditions that are just terrific. Then in August, we're having Julie Kasnayunas, who is a local watercolorist who does beautiful images of the dunes. And then in September, we have Linda Sorkin Eisenberg. She's an artist from Chicago who also lives part-time out here. She is an amazing multimedia artist. And last, but of course not least, is Susie Vance and Karen Brown, who are collaborating to do an exhibit about art inspired by the forest.
Excellent.
Sounds fabulous.
When is your openings generally? Is it on a Friday, the first Friday?
Always on the second.
Or second Friday.
We try very hard not to compete with Michigan City, but to expand the artistic experience beyond.
Very good. And tell us where you are located for our audience that doesn't happen to know about it.
We're at 525 Broadway in Beverly Shores, in the heart of the park, so to speak.
And that's right along US 12, for those of you who may not know where what Broadway you were talking about. You can go right along US 12.
It's the only stoplight in town. And you just head toward the lake, and there we are.
And tell us how they can find you online, and once again, Nancy, how they can find the About 5x5.
They can find the depot, and both information about the exhibits for the museum and the art gallery at bsdepot.org.
And to directly shop the gift shop, it's bsdepot.com, but you can get to .com from .org.
Sounds great. Well, Nancy Shaw from the gift shop and Susie Vance, president of the Depot Museum and Art Gallery, about 5x5 and much more. Thank you so much for being on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We'd like to welcome to this special edition of Art in the Air, Duo Sequenza. They're an internationally acclaimed concert chamber music ensemble comprised of a flute and classical guitar. They are selected to South Shore communities with several short theme performances in non-traditional venues. We're going to listen to all that this week. We'd like to welcome Deborah Silvert and Paul Bowman to Art on the Air. And we're going to talk about their new upcoming project supported by the Indiana Arts Commission. Deborah, Paul, welcome to Art on the Air.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks much, Larry and Esther. It's great to be here.
Well, and we should say up front that we are sort of supporting this project, which they're going to talk about as Art in the Air, to fulfill their grant requirements because of special circumstances. So one of you or the other, just tell us briefly about the project, and then we're going to talk a little about your biographies and backgrounds. So, Deborah, I don't know if you want to take that or Paul.
Yeah, I'll take it first. So Project Listen Up is the name of the project. And this is what we're doing today, is part of our 2021 virtual edition of the project. No one anticipated that COVID was going to take this long to get through. So what happened was that last year we had scheduled 15 performances in non-traditional venues, in basically those were in Porter County last year. And of the 15, because of COVID, we had to cancel 12. COVID came out right as our project was rolling out in March of 2020. And that was just so unfortunate and so disappointing. So when we wrote the grant for the project for 2021, the anticipation was that we would be able to do the live performances. And when it came right down to it, it didn't work out practically speaking, because many of the venues that we do, since they are non-traditional, they're very small. And so we can't properly socially distance the audience, or even ourselves for that matter. So the idea of this project is that we are we're championing today's classical music, especially to demonstrate its relevance and how it's connected to everyday life. We take pieces of music that are serious literature, that are written for flute and classical guitar, and we match these certain pieces of music to the non-traditional venues with a theme. So, for example, you know, we might do a program called Chamber Music on Tap, and the music that we would include there would be things like our piece by Ian Krause, Dachara, which translates as two friends, and the it's like Irish music. So there's a beautiful Irish air, and then there's a wild reel. So that, you know, that's the connection there with pubs and the Irish music. And also we have a piece called The Drunken Friar, which has an obvious connection to a microbrewery. So that's, and another piece, you know, called Somerset Suite, which is an older piece, but it includes a movement like, for example, of John Barleycorn, which is an obvious reference to beer. So that's just one example. There's a program called Road Trip that we like to do, like in an automobile dealership showroom. And it includes Robert Maggio's traveling songs. It includes Frederick Hand's Four Excursions. So, you know, that's what we try to do. We take these very good pieces of music literature and then sort of tie them into where we're going to be and perform them to just kind of tie everything together, get people to listen to this music, hopefully in a new way. We want them to actively listen. We want them to become fans of today's classical music.
Deborah, what do you mean by that, today's classical music?
So, you know, I'm going to let Paul answer that one.
Well, it's meant a lot of different things over the years. But for most musicians, it means that changes are rapid in style and recognition. And a lot of contemporary composers who write for us who are open to these changes, some of them are coming from rock and prog rock and maybe even some hip-hop and other backgrounds. And it's infusing in classical music, which, again, is the primary mover for connecting with today's audiences. And Project Listen Up is frankly also an attempt to come to their territory where they're comfortable at. You know, we've done concerts at hair salons, we've done concerts at a printing office that manufactures printing equipment and so on, and signs, and we have such a wide breadth of repertoire that we've played over, God, I don't know, we got together in 1989, and so we certainly have a wide array of music, and we're excited about the new music that's being written today. We embrace these challenges and this new. It used to be, for me, I was a pretty hardcore uptowner, which means more academic music that I had from my New York background. And I tell you, I'm really open to everything, because it widens you as a musician, and it broadens the scope of acceptance and relevance of classical music to the contemporary public.
It sure does. And it sounds like it's now a multidimensional sort of experience. When I read about your recent, I think they were recent residencies at the Frost School of Music and the Lowe Art Museum, it sounded phenomenal. And that's where I got excited because I so embrace all elements coming into music. And this is such a smart move because it does make it more accessible to everybody right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the composers down there, one of the grad student composers of Professor Dorothy Heinemann, wrote almost a dance, electronic dance piece, and it could, you know, could be used for something, you know, in clubs and stuff. You know, it's like, you know, well, he wanted it at a possibly fast tempo, so I know where his background is, you know.
It's very exciting.
Real quickly, can you tell us how you guys got together as Duo Sequenza?
Oh, sure. Well, Deborah already established herself in Valparaiso, and I was living in New York for most of the 1980s and moved back late in 89, and we met, and I don't know who I asked. I think I stopped at old Molinar Music there on Lincoln Way when it used to be there in Valparaiso, and asked who the hot to trot flutist was around. I wanted to play, and they gave Deb's name and number, and so the rest is history. But we had concerts right out of the bat. I mean, right, Deb? We were at IU Central, North Central, right? We did a concert there. We did things in La Porte at the church where Dave Eicher and his partner were there as cantors and music directors. We had support right off the bat.
Yeah, we hit the ground running because of that support. I mean, not only was it a real good match, Paul and I, musically, it was exciting for me because I was not familiar with the flute and guitar, classical guitar repertoire, mainly because there's really not a lot of opportunity for flutists to play with classical guitars because the repertoire is very hard for classical guitar. It's a very difficult instrument, and most flutists are not going to be able to find a guitarist that can really manage that repertoire like Paul can. Paul's just
the success
phenomenal.
Of college and conservatory programs nowadays, you could find more aptly find somebody. But back in 88, 89, 90, there weren't too many folks. That's true.
Certainly. And I, of course, right away with me, I was someone who was entranced by sort of the very ethereal qualities that the flute can take on and, you know, the very soft kinds of things that the flute can do. And I'd been working pretty much exclusively in woodwind quintet and with piano. And, you know, in those situations, you know, it's not appropriate for the flute to do all these very highly if you do all these very highly nuanced things and soft things and, you know, thready, gauzy sorts of effects, it's just covered up. No one ever hears it. So you work to get these things, you know, very, very fine and very beautiful, you know, for naught because it's just covered over. But with classical guitar, Paul doesn't cover, you know, he doesn't cover up the flute, which is just amazing. And not only that, I mean, what he can do, I can't do, and what I can do, he can't do. It's just a nice, duo. And when you have composers that really are capable of writing for that ensemble, it's wonderful, wonderful music.
Well, what we want to do now is get into the South Shore Suite, and we're going to listen to the first piece. It's called Princess Mishawaka, and we'll listen to that right now, and then we'll come back and comment on that. So here we go. We're going to listen to Princess Mishawaka. And that was Princess Mishawaka from the South Shore Suite. And it's a lot musically going on there, isn't there?
There certainly is. What you really just heard, I was thinking about this morning, of all the little pieces in this suite by composer Jorge Muñez, Princess Mishawaka is like a ballad in a way. It told a story. You could hear how throughout the piece, it progresses. There are many different sections, and it tells a story. It turns out that the story is as follows. Princess Mishawaka was the daughter of the Shawnee tribal leader, who is Chief Elkhart, and you can see where we get these Indiana names from. And so in 1801, Chief Elkhart attacked the Potawatomi tribe, and their chief was Chief Pokagon. So Chief Elkhart and the Shawnees drove the Potawatomis away from the St. Joe River Valley down into, pushing them northward into Michigan. They moved them tried to move them out of the South Shore region and push them up northward into Michigan. So in retaliation for that attack, a Potawatomi Indian by the name of Gray Wolf abducted the Chief Elkhart's daughter, who was Princess Mishawaka. And so there was a big ensuing battle. And so you hear, like, you know, like in the beginning of the piece, I hear sort of the personality of the princess showing itself. Later on, you hear warlike sections. And what ultimately happened in the story, in the legend here, was that the princess got rescued from this kidnapping by a white trapper who was known as Deadshot because he had this amazing rifle skill. And once she was freed, the princess fell in love with her rescuer, with Deadshot. And it was actually kind of a Gray Wolf, it turns out, who had kidnapped her in the first place. He had hoped to win her love. You know, he had hoped, why these kidnappers think this is going to happen. I guess that's what Stockholm syndrome or something. Anyway, she didn't fall in love with the kidnapper. She fell in love with the rescuer instead. And she stayed with him. And she stayed in the Mishawaka area. And so that's the story that you heard. I mean, I think you could hear in there some of the beautiful love music or love song type of thing. And it very much sort of takes the form of that, of the ballad.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Let's move on to the next one. We'll listen now to Mount Baldy, a familiar feature for everyone in the Dunes National Lakeshore. Thank you. And from the South Shore Suite from Duo Sequenza, that was Mount Baldy.
I so appreciate your dedication to reaching out to composers. Your history of that is phenomenal, and thank you. And
Yes. I believe that when we could be sort of the standard bearers of new repertoire as opposed to what everyone else does, It sort of sets us apart in terms of setting the standard. And, you know, with classical music, you have experts doing Chopin and Bach and Beethoven. And there's high, real high standard set. But this gets to be our own repertoire. And we set the high standards, and that's how we work.
Well, Paul, quickly tell us a little bit about the specifics of that piece, Mount Baldy.
Well, we have Deb playing the alto flute, which is a deeper, lower pitch sounding flute with considerable more plumbing. And she's playing quite a lot of whispery, very fast passages that imitate the whirlwind that you would see on a big amount of sand that, you know, and with the wind and the way it moves, and the guitar is also imitating in some ways this rapid sort of circular sounding. And what I mean circular sounding is that Deborah's lines go up and down and very fast and fleet, and mine do as well. So that is really what this piece highlights for the guitar and the alto flute.
Very good. Well, now let's move on to Lake Michigan, the next piece in the South Shore Suite from Duo Sequenza.
Thank you.
From South Shore Suite from Duo Sequenza, that was Lake Michigan.
Deborah and Paul, I really love evocative pieces of music that I can experience as a place or a season. And so I really respond to things like Mount Baldy, where I can be there and feel the experience through your music. So thank you.
Yeah, and I think that's very true of the Lake Michigan movement as well. It sort of represents just a carefree, sunny summer day. The different kinds of people you can imagine being on the beach, different backgrounds. What you hear in the piece is a lot of different musical genres that the composer Jorge Muñoz has used. There's a little bit of a hint of bluegrass in the movement. There's a little bit of Heartland rock, and there's even a little bit of a waltz section that, it's just a very unique kind of take on Lake Michigan. What's it all about?
Quick interjection. Sorry. I think of it as you're briskly walking on the beach. And in the old days, we had transistor radios. You go from one station to another station to another as you're walking on the beach. And that is what my childhood remembrance is of walking on the beach growing up in Chesterton. So that's what this Mount Baldy evokes, in my opinion. Lake Michigan and Mount Baldy both. Well, in terms of the radio, yes, the changing styles you hear on the beach at the Lake Michigan.
Well, I want to move on to the next movement, which is called Diana of the Dunes. And I know there's a story there, but it's kind of a spooky one. So here's from Duo Sequenza's South Shore Suite, Diana of the Dunes. Thank you. And that was Diana of the Dunes from the South Shore Suite from Duo Sequenza.
Yeah, I love the Diana story. Can you expound on it, please?
Sure. Diana is one of our region's best loved legends. Diana of the Dunes was sort of a moniker that was given by the press to a woman by the name of Alice Gray. And in 1915, she left her job in Chicago because she was very work weary. And she was what she was doing in Chicago was that she was a computer. If you can imagine, like, you know, we think of what a computer is today, but back then, human beings were computers. She tallied numbers. That's what she did. And she got very tired of the rush, rat race, so to speak, that she was living in the city. And she wanted to withdraw from that life to live a simpler life, amidst the flora and the fauna of the Indiana Dunes. She was very brilliant. She was highly educated. She was 34 years old. She was probably an early feminist. And she, when she was interviewed by the press, and she was very elusive, so this was kind of a rarity, she said, "I wanted to live my own life, a free life. The life of a salary earner in the cities is slavery. It's a constant fight for a means of living. But here," referring to the Dunes, "it's so different." So I'll let Paul talk about the music of it a little bit.
Well, yeah, we have the blending of reality and sort of fantasy land, because there's stories of her as a ghost after she passed, people seeing her on the beach running naked, running in the woods, in the dunes, so on. And so what Jorge has done is given the guitar sort of this gossamer light, that represents the spirit, I think, of Alice Gray in playing. And the technique he uses for the classical guitar is a technique called the harmonic. And that is by simply a simple Pythagorean theory. You place your finger in the middle of a string and it divides the octave in half. And you put it in half of that distance and get another what we call partial in the harmonic world that we call. And so Deborah is also doing harmonics on her flute and a little bit of piccolo, I might add, but we don't. And so it gives a different color as well as the right atmosphere. And, it paints a story of her life. But in my mind and ears, it's a more of an ethereal type of, painting, picture that you get from listening to the music.
Very good. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Well, we have one more in the suite, which I think the story everyone is familiar with. It's called Dillinger's Run. So let's take a listen to that from the South Shore Suite from Duo Sequenza. Thank you. And that was Dillinger's Run from the South Shore Suite from Duo Sequenza, part of their whole project they're working on.
Thanks, Larry. Yes, that was and that's the concluding movement of the entire South Shore Suite by Jorge Muñoz. The Dillinger's Run movement is portraying the idea of his very famous jailbreak from the Crown Point jail, where he got away and went to Chicago. It segues right up onto the epilogue, where at the very end of that little piece, you heard the train, the repeat of the idea of the movement of the train, that we're on a journey and so on and so forth. And that sort of is the ending bookend of piece. We also recorded the very first movement of the piece called Prologue, where our metaphorical journey on the South Shore line starts in South Bend. You can see that performance of the prologue to this suite, which we didn't include today in this broadcast. You can see that on June the 9th. Lakeshore PBS has turned that into a feature segment on their new Friends and Neighbor program. And so that is, you'll be able to see that when that airs from Lakeshore PBS on June the 9th, as the rest of our virtual project Listen Up for 2021. So Paul will tell you the story about the Dillinger movement.
Yeah, well, everyone knows how he got out with the bar soap whittled to look like a gun with black shoe polish. And this really is kind of a tragic as well as a melancholy movement talking about Dillinger. there's moments of reflection, because he was an egoist, but we think he was part human, and Jorge did too, and he has had some moments of reflection in this piece. It's not all just, you know, a chase, which the title suggests, and which you heard, there's a lot of chasing going on using 16th note motor rhythms and so on. But we also think that at some point he had to wonder if this was the right kind of lifestyle for him, and regrets and so on. And Jorge gives him an almost a human quality, I would say. You know, he's a real person, even though he was America's public enemy number one, the very first one. But we detect a lot of sympathy for this character in the piece. And again, you know, other people might get a different view. Again, music is the most abstract art, in my opinion. And whatever you get is fine. We're not dictating anything, any idea that you should get about a piece.
Well, thank you, Paul.
I agree with that.
That was Project Listen Up 2020 Virtual Edition with Duo Sequenza, made up of Deborah Silvert and Paul Bowman. And you'll be hearing that later on in June. We'd like to thank them for being on Art in the Air with the special edition, with Art in the Air being a supporter of the Project Listen Up 2021 edition. And thank you so much for being on Art in the Air.
Thank you so much.
That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.